Blog Talk Radio.
Another episode of Polar Opposites. I'm your host, Big T, right here on the PO Show. And as always, I'm joined by my main man, my friend, your friend, soon to be everybody's friend, Mr. Cool Hand Phil. Phil, how are you this evening?
I'm doing fantastic. I mean, it's deja vu, another great introduction by yourself. I'm walking in another winter wonderland. We're supposed to get more of it tomorrow, so it's been a great week, Terrence. I'm looking forward to another good show.
Hey, the way I understand it is your Razorbacks are handling business tonight on the hardwood, going up against SEC foe, the Texas A&M Aggies. How's that working out for you tonight?
You know, the Razorbacks have really surprised me this year. Mike Anderson has turned the season around. You know, they're I would say at the beginning of the season, I was boycotting the Razorbacks. You know, just because it's like he didn't have a clue of what he was doing. The players looked like they were lost, and he has completely turned it around. It seems like he has his rotation down. He's given the guys that need the minutes, giving those guys the minutes, and so they're on a streak now. I think they've won, you know, like 8 of the last 9 games that they played, cracked the top 25, so it's looking good, man. Hopefully we can make some noise in the tournament this year.
Well, you said it right. A lot of teams, they're not the only ones, are starting to turn things around and make a run this time of year, not just in the college ranks, but the same thing is happening in the pro ranks. We'll get into all that in just a little bit. But first, we'll start this show the way we start every single show. As adults, you make plenty of decisions every single day. Hey, we're just glad you decided to spend just a little time with us right here on the PO Show. Phil, since we last spoke, so much has happened in the sports world. Joey Logano was crowned the latest Daytona 500 winner. A-Rod is back in pinstripes with his beloved New York Yankees. And, hey, if LeBron James can go home, Kevin Garnett said, why can't I? He re-signs with the Minnesota Timberwolves. And like I said, there's so much has happened. But the latest, and this is where we'll start our conversation, the latest is on last night in college hoops. We had, for the second time, K-State comes up from behind and destroys their in-state rival, Kansas. And again, that happened, the identical thing happened last year. Kansas, of course, nationally ranked in the top 10. I think they were number 8 going into the game, and then got destroyed by an unranked Kansas State. Now, the story should be the game, but it's not. It's what ensued after the game, Phil, where the story begins. After the game, you can imagine, unranked Kansas State, they do what colleges do all across the country in that situation. They what we affectionately call, they stormed the court to the dismay of all of those watching, particularly the coaching staff of Kansas. So here's the question, and let me just start at the highest level of this situation. Do you think it's problematic? Do you have a problem when the underdogs come up with a victory? And I know you root for the underdog. Do you have a problem with the underdog student body storming the floor?
Yeah, I mean, Terrence, I'm 5'8", so of course I'm always going to root for the underdog. I've been an underdog my whole life. No, I really don't have a problem with it, but I think it does get very dicey whenever you're putting fans or players, when you're putting their safety at in jeopardy. And so I really don't have a problem either way. You know, I think you see a lot of these football, especially during football season, when, you know, there's a rival game and the ranked team loses on the road to the unranked team and the fans storm the field. And I think these schools get fined if they allow that to happen. But a lot of times you can tell that they have, you know, security lined up, but they're not really trying to prevent the stands from entering the player space. And sometimes you can see, like, the security guard helping people, in the stands down onto the playing field. So, to me, I don't have a problem with it. And if the fans are going to be responsible, then I think it can be done in a way where you don't put anyone's safety in harm's way. But at the same time, I don't have a problem with schools doing that, because I think the biggest reason for them to do that is safety. And whenever you're talking about safety, I don't know how you can really, you know, judge anyone for the decisions they make. Because, I mean, there's been times where people have been killed or at least seriously injured. I mean, I know they have at concerts and things like that where you have many people rushing, someone falls, and then everyone behind it, you know, they don't even see them. You know, they get trampled and are seriously injured. So, man, I mean, it's just a tough, because I love to see it. I mean, if you remember when Auburn beat Alabama in the, the Iron Bowl, and of course, now I think that's no. It is actually played. It's not a neutral site game anymore. So it was at Auburn, and when they showed those aerial views of the field just completely covered by all those fans, I mean, that was a great sight. And I know the fans and the players and everyone, even watching at home, is going to remember that. So it, I don't know. I'm kind of torn on it. So maybe you can give me. I'm 50-50, so I'll just let you push it over the fence. Where do you stand on this? You know, prevent it or fans? You know, fans are going to be fans.
Yeah, I gotta go with fans are going to be fans. And the thing that makes college athletics so much fun to watch and to be a part of is the enthusiasm and the excitement that the college athlete, the college fan, that they bring. You know, it's a total different atmosphere from the pros. And I think we'd be doing a great service to that experience if we tried to water that down in some way, some shape or fashion. And I think it's funny, and you kind of touched on it. You said it yourself. You said, how can you argue with it if you say it's for safety? And that's and you're exactly right. And that's how you know it's not about safety, because that's what they always say. They say safety because you can't argue against it. So, it's for safety reasons, you know. And that's not the deal. I've just seen so many things, so many good things get ruined when they try to stop it. You know, I've heard people talk today on different talk shows about, well, you can have security and they can rope off the floor. No, you can't. That's when people get hurt, because somebody inevitably will try to break that human chain. Now you've got opposing forces. And that's when somebody gets hurt. That's when there's going to be an accident, just like you talked about with the concerts. The problem is you've got a wall of people standing, pushing one way, and another group pushing the other way. And that's when, you know, somebody gets hurt. So, as soon as they say it's about safety, then why you got this, you know, this $10 an hour rent-a-cop clotheslining people that are trying to run onto the court? So it's not about safety, so we should stop that. And quite honestly, I'm going to go the Jimmy Johnson approach on this thing. Hey, if you don't want people storming the floor, then win the game. That's all I got to say to the incumbent teams. If you don't want people storming the floor, then win the game. Then handle your business, and you don't have to worry about that. You go on the road into the Lions Den to handle your business. Otherwise, expect to get stormed on. And I mean, I don't know else how to say it. I mean, I agree with you. It would be a travesty, a tragedy, if something like that happened on a nationally televised event, you know, a big game like this Kansas State game, that was a big game, ESPN carried it, you're right. It would have been a horrific sight if something had really happened poorly. But at the same time, too, I just got to call BS to Bill Self in Kansas, because the game didn't come down to a last-second bucket. Why couldn't, when there was 2 seconds left on the clock? Now, keep in mind, Kansas even brought the ball up for the final shot. Tell me why Kansas, the coach, couldn't have called a timeout before that last possession and said, hey, listen, man, you fought hard, you played hard, but it looks like this one's going to get away from us. When the clock goes to 00, I want every last one of you beeline to the locker room. This place is going to go nuts. These kids are going to, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
You know, to hear Bill Self cry about being pinned up against the table, well, that's your own fault. You know, A, you didn't handle your business, you didn't win the game, and B, you didn't have sense enough to look at the situation and know it's about to get crazy in here, you know.
Yeah.
Because, look, the referee had sense enough. If you ever see the clip, watch the ref underneath the goal. Dude, he put on his track shoes and broke out. That dude ran across the court so fast, it looked like a rodent running across the floor. So at the end of the day, I don't have a problem with storming the court, and I hope and pray that the NCAA doesn't get in front of, you know, get beside themselves and try to regulate, again, one of the funnest things to watch in college sports.
Well, I mean, and when you think about it, that's, you know, to use your words, sports are just a microcosm of, you know, the real world, of society. And that's what always happens when you have one incident, you know, just a mm-hmm. exception to the rule, then mm-hmm. everyone freaks out. And so I think that's what would happen. You know, someone will get injured, and then that's when they'll flip out instead of saying, look, man, I mean, people get hurt playing the actual game. You know, I mean, there's mm-hmm. been people that have been killed playing sports. I mean, they had a big NASCAR race this past weekend. Well, you know, Dale Earnhardt Jr. passed away, you know, 15 years ago from same race. So, mm-hmm. you know, to me, you just can't flip out. You have to look at it as a whole and say, okay, these types of things are going to happen. Let's just try to educate the fan or, you know, put procedures in to make sure that, hey, if this happens, you know, over here is how we're going to help you get to the – I don't know. I mean, just – but to me, make it easier instead of making it more difficult, because I'm with you. The more difficult that you make it to keep people from doing what they want to do, mm-hmm. because when you have a big win like that, the natural reaction is – to rush the court. You know, everyone's mm-hmm. grown up. That's what you've seen. So if you start to try to fight that, you know, to me that's going to lead to even more, because it could escalate. You know, if you have cops or whoever, you know, trying to keep them, and then it escalates to a fight. I mean, there's just no telling what could happen. So I'm with you. I really wish they would keep that, and that's an interesting point that you made about safety. I never thought about it like that, but yeah, if you say, oh, we're going to do it for safety, you know, it's kind of hard to come back at it. So, yeah, that would be the perfect scapegoat to use that mm-hmm. as the excuse.
And really what I hope the NCAA basketball, I hope they take a page out of NCAA football's playbook. Because when there was a concern about safety with kids storming the field and hanging on the goalpost, well, what did they do, Phil? They came up with the breakaway goalpost so that they can't have a goalpost falling on people and getting injured. They never said, okay, you can't come on the field, as you pointed out, so eloquently pointed out, heck, the security people are helping them down onto the field. so football did it the right way. Football didn't say, hey, don't run the field. Football said, hey, if you're going to run the field, let us help you down. Nobody jump off the ledge. And here, let us go ahead and get these goalposts out your way so you can go crazy and have fun. So hopefully basketball can take a look at that and somehow follow suit. But also in college basketball, Phil, since we last spoke, not a lot has changed in the way that Kentucky is handling its business. Still undefeated, still continue to torch the SEC as they go through regular conference play. But they do have, and again, we talked about it here before, according to the computers, Georgia has the most likely chance to win the game, although it's only 14%. It's higher than everybody else in the conference, and they've yet to have that game on the road. But it looks like, from what I've seen, it does look like University of Kentucky will be able to finish the regular season, or at least I'll say this, they'll at least be able to get to the tournament, to the SEC tournament without a loss.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, because you see a lot of teams when they have that much success in the regular season, they don't necessarily always win the conference tournament. And it's, you know, it's kind of probably planned. I mean, it's like the Popovich plan. You know, it's like, hey, let's rest these guys during the tournament. I mean, because it's twofold as far as the advantage you get. You get to rest the guys for the tournament, and then some of the guys that you have that more than likely are going to return the next year, they get some really good experience to be able to play in, you know, a highly competitive tournament like a conference championship tournament. So I would not be surprised if Kentucky did lose in the finals of the SEC tournament, just because it's natural, you know, to be looking at the big goal that you have. I mean, everyone wants to win the conference championship, but, you know, is it really worth trying that hard to win it when you've already won the regular season? You know, so what's a bigger accomplishment, winning the regular season or winning basically for them a, what, two-game tournament? Because they're going to get a double bye in the SEC tournament. So I think they'd only have to win two games. I mean, I think that's right. Well, maybe three. I think maybe they'd have to win Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I'd have to look at the schedule. It's kind of different now that they have 14 teams. I would not be surprised, to your point, that if they remain undefeated in the regular season, that they wouldn't go down in the SEC tournament. But I mean, what do you think about the NCAA tournament? Who would you pick to win that? Are you going with Kentucky, or you think someone could upset them?
I need to see more of how this thing is going to be seeded, because I was just looking at the top, the top teams there. Now, this fresh in, hot off the press, number three, Wisconsin, just took an L to Maryland this evening. A surprise upset there, 59-53, Maryland being the victors in that one. But you've got Virginia, Wisconsin, and Gonzaga all playing just unbelievable basketball. Virginia, again, every time I've had a chance to see them play, their defense is so tenacious. They would cause fits for just about anybody. So it's hard for me to really say, Phil, but, you know, looking at those teams, they all deserve number one seeds. Kentucky, Virginia, Wisconsin, Gonzaga, all of those deserve a number one seed. So it'd be difficult to say who's going to do what, because if any one of those four teams winds up in the same bracket, obviously that's going to greatly decrease their odds of making it to the big dance. But we will see as bracketology gets started here in just a little bit. Now, you made mention when you were talking just a second ago, you made reference to the San Antonio Spurs head coach, Greg Popovich, who is obviously looked at as one of the greatest, one of the best coaches that has been on the sideline, and is definitely one of the best coaches in the game currently. And that actually brings us to our second debate topic. Because in a game last week, Phil, where the Spurs played Doc Rivers and his Los Angeles Clippers, what should have been a great, exciting game, Phil, against two Western Conference powerhouses turned out to be just a whole bunch of muckety-muck. And the reason the game turned into muckety-muck is the greatest coach in the game today, Greg Popovich, decided to enlist the Hack-a-Shack against the Clippers' DeAndre Jordan. Not at the end of the game, Phil. In the second quarter, and then again early in the fourth quarter. So much of the game was just this constant parade to the free throw line. And I think DeAndre Jordan, I think he maybe attempted some ridiculous number, some 25, 28 free throws in the game. So the question on the table is this tactic. Now, keep in mind, the NBA has already said you can't do it the last 2 minutes of the game. So, to me, that's the NBA already letting you know that they don't like that style of play. But it's legal to do any other time. But what's your take on the Hack of Shaq, the Hack of Jordan, the Hack of Dwight, you name it. What's your take on this in basketball? Does that tactic have its place in basketball?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and I didn't know that was a rule that you couldn't do it in the last 2 minutes. Is that where you can't do a off-ball foul? Is that what it is?
That's correct.
I mean,
that's correct.
Okay, so if they're shooting, you can foul. But see, and I've never liked rules like that are predicated on how much time is left during the game, you know, because there's been other rules mm-hmm. like that. And to me, that can give an advantage to a different team just depending
right.
on what their strengths are versus the other team's weakness. So I've never liked rules like that. If a rule is good enough to be in the last 2 minutes of the game, it needs to be a rule
mm-hmm.
throughout the game. So, but with that said, I don't like that rule at all. If you have a guy that can't shoot free throws and you can put him on the free throw line to gain an advantage, then I don't see anything wrong with that. So that means you just need to go and practice your free throws. I mean, it's called a free throw. It's not like it should be an advantage for someone to put you on the line. So I don't know. I'm not a fan of that. It's just strategy to me. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you've seen teams like the New England Patriots, you know, take a safety on purpose because, you
sure.
know, however many points they're down, they don't, you know, want to punt it back and give them better field position. So, you know, so to me, if you want to shoot yourself in the foot because it gives you an advantage in a different way, then I don't see how you can stop that. So, no, I am not a fan of trying to prevent a team, you know, by playing within the rules to gain an advantage at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can go either way on it, and I have to agree with you there. And side note here, the reason this even caught so much attention is because the TNT crew, Shaq went on a whole big soliloquy himself talking about how he hated that type of play. But of course, Charles Barkley said, you sound kind of sensitive over there talking about it. And of course, you know, it was this whole thing was created because of Shaq. Shaq was the first player of the modern basketball era that people would target because of his poor free throw shooting. So naturally he would have
right.
an opinion on the matter. But the thing that he said that I have to agree with him, you know, Shaq said, hey, it's called basketball, not basket strategy. Play ball, you know. And from a fan's perspective, like I said, it was what should have been an exciting game was just completely trashed and slowed down to the point where you couldn't even enjoy it because of all the fouls. And from a fan perspective, you know, that's not what you paid that high-dollar ticket to see. You know, it's bad enough that Popovich is going to have Tim Duncan and Tony Parker and Ginobili on the bench and not even play. That's bad enough. But then not only did you pay the money not to see the stars play, the idiots that are out there are fouling a guy that's 20 feet away from the ball just so he can go and miss a free throw. I mean, so from a fan perspective, I get it. That's difficult to watch. However, I go back to, like I said earlier, the same way with storming the court. You don't want them storming the court and win the game. You don't want somebody to intentionally foul you, then sink your free throws. And it takes care of itself. See, I like to let the game police itself. You know, just like, oh, you can't run up the score. What Jimmy Johnson say? Hey, well, then stop us. You know, and that's where I'm at. I like to let the game police itself. And the best, so if you don't like your big man going to the free throw line 28 times in a game, then tell him to make more than 50% of those shots, and you don't have a problem. I mean,
yeah.
DeAndre Jordan has the worst free throw shooting in the league. In fact, he's the only player in the league that is shooting less than 50%. So, there's no excuse for that. So, you know, like I said, I see them both the same way. You have it in your ability to stop that which you don't like. You know, make your free throws, win the game. You know, stop us from scoring, whatever it may be. You know, and this isn't just basketball, field. There's stuff like this in every game. You know, it's the intentional walk in baseball, right? It's the hurry up offense in football, or the and this may be going across the line, faking an injury to stop the hurry up offense. You know, there are loopholes in every major sport that coaches and players use to their advantage to have the game sway their way. And if you don't like that, if you're the other team and you don't like that, then just beat them is the way I see it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Barkley in regarding Shaq's comments. I mean, if they played by the rules, then, I mean, Shaq would not have been as effective as he was. I mean, I've never seen a player that the refs just said, okay, we're never going to call a charge on this guy. I mean, he never went around anyone. You know, the last probably 8 years of his career, I mean, he would just, you know, bowl you over, run through you, and then dunk it. And they would just do that because they said, well, he's stronger than everyone. You know, so to me, you can have it both ways. But, yeah, I'm with you. You've never heard of hack a Steph, you know, hack a Curry. You never hear that,
right?
Because that guy can make his free throws. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can't get mad because, again, that you have a disadvantage. I mean, let's say they played a team that did not have a center and Shaq could just go and dunk every time. You know, do you think Shaq would say, well, you know, that's really not fair, you know, for me to just keep dunking on this guy that's 6'4"? You know, so it's all about trying to find a mismatch or a disadvantage that you can take advantage of. So I have no problem with it whatsoever. I mean, because you only have a certain number of fouls. You know, once you foul that guy out, well, then you got to bring somebody else in. So you'll get your opportunity somewhere. But I have absolutely no problem with a hack a Shaq or hack a whoever if it gives you an advantage. Again, just like you said, that's a part of the game. You have a team that has a real prolific offense. I mean, what do? You try to slow your offense down to give your defense time to rest. I mean, it is strategy. That's what every sport is. It's about strategy. So
exactly.
Now, Shaq didn't strike me as the brightest guy, so I could see him saying it's not basket strategy. I mean, no, Shaq, you're wrong. It's all about strategy.
Right, definitely. So you mentioned you brought up Steph Curry there. You're right. Nobody's fouling this dude. He is a pure sharp shooter. In fact, put about 32 of them on him tonight against the Washington Wizards. And that was enough to give Golden State, once again, the best record in the league at 44-10. They've only lost 10 games all season. And when you look at what's going on out west, they're definitely the easy pick to win the West. But the West, man, I tell you what, it's a juggernaut of teams out there. I mean, Golden State, again, they have the best record. But look at what's going on out west, and if we look at the last 10 games that have played, Golden State is 8 out of their last 10. Memphis, 8 out of their last 10. Dallas is 7 of their last 3. And don't sleep on them yet, Phil. In the 8th spot, Oklahoma City is 9 of their last 10. So when you look at the teams out west, who do you think, Phil? Who do you think will represent the West in the NBA Finals?
Well, I mean, I'm like 0-12 of the last, you know, teams that I want to see succeed. I mean, the Broncos, they went down. Ooh, look at that dunk right there. the Broncos went down, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers went down. So, you know, none of the teams that I want to win are winning. So I want it to be Golden State. You know, I like Steph Curry. I like their style of play. They're fun to watch. However, I just do not see them coming out to represent the West in the NBA Finals. So I'm going to go with the number two team right now in Memphis. It just seems like Memphis has been right there for probably about the past 3 years. I think last year they even made it to the conference finals, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And I think the year before they made it to the conference semis. So I really feel like they're going to break out this year and make it to the finals, and they'll be representing the West as far as that goes. But if I had to pick a number two team, you know, just like what you just said, I mean, in the last 10 games, Oklahoma City has been 9-1, and I think that's going to be predicated, though, on keeping Durant healthy. I think he is going to take some time off again for that injured toe. I don't think it's extremely serious, but if he just keeps, if he keeps re-aggravating that injury, it could cost them in the playoffs. And I think right now they're just saying it's quote discomfort. So I don't even think it's really necessarily an injury. He just, you know, for whatever reason, it just keeps nagging at him, and so they're trying to figure that out. But they're always dangerous. I mean, you know, you have Westbrook. As much as you and I want to, you know, discuss, does he help the team, hurt the team whenever he tries to take over, but he's still dangerous, very athletic, can cause problems on the other side of the ball, too, with disrupting the play of the opposing team's point guard. So Oklahoma City is always dangerous because of all the talent that they do have. So I would have to put them as my number two team, but I'm looking at Memphis to kind of take over.
Yeah, I got to ride right with you on that. I pretty much almost word for word, I agree with you, Phil. Golden State is fun to watch. I like this up-tempo style of play, and they just flat out score more points than you do. I mean, that's their game. They're just going to score more points. In fact, if I look through the league, they are, I mean, head and shoulders. They're scoring somewhere in the neighborhood of about 110 points a game. The next closest team to that is 105, 106, the Clippers at 106. So, I mean, they're just flat out. They're just going to – they got shooters, they got scorers, and they know how to get it done. But as we all know, when it comes to playoff basketball – when the games slow down and you're facing the same team every other night, every other day of the week, defense is what's going to help you out. And when I look on the other side, the teams that allow the fewest points, you're right, it's Memphis. Memphis allowing only about 95 points a game, and that is not just the best in the West, that's the best in the league. In fact, there's not a team in the East. Let's see, you've got a couple of teams at 96, but nobody else, you know, in that 95 range. And then in the West, you know, they're at 95, and the next closest team is 97 in terms of points allowed. So Memphis has, I think they have what it takes to have the pieces. You mentioned how close they were. Yep, conference finals last year, one game away from the conference finals the year before. Both of those series went seven games. Could have easily went their way. A free throw here, a missed shot there, an offensive rebound here, a turnover there, you know, easily could have went their way. So I agree with you as well. I see them as being primed and ready. But, man, I feel for the team that gets Oklahoma. If the playoffs started next week and you got Oklahoma City in the eighth spot, I feel for the team that gets Oklahoma City in that first round, whether that's Golden State or Memphis, depending on how it goes. So our pick could easily be upset in just the first round. But let me ask you this: out of those teams that we're looking at there in the Western Conference, we both like Memphis, we both like Golden State, but we both chose Memphis to go on. Are there any players out West, Phil, that you see that should be in the MVP conversation?
You know, I mean, I don't know if Steph Curry would be considered for that. I mean, I know he's one of the top leading scorers, so, you know, they have the best ranked team in the West, but I just don't know if his name comes up that often. I mean, I think I've heard Westbrook's name, you know, thrown around just for the way that he's kind of carried the team with Durant, you know, missing well, I think Durant's played in 27 games, so he's probably missed about, what, 30 games this year. So for them to still be in contention, even though, I mean, they're 13.5 games behind Golden State, I've heard his name mentioned. You've got Chris Paul, but, I mean, I don't know why you couldn't consider Steph Curry to be that with the highest ranked team in the West and, you know, one of the top leading scorers. For him to do that game in and game out, I don't see why he couldn't get a few votes.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Curry should be worthy. I mean, he's playing on the best team. Team has the best record. He's the best player on that team. And you're right. He's doing it night in and night out. Not a lot of ups and downs. I mean, very consistent, very steady with the style of play. You know, is he flashy enough to be an MVP? I don't know.
Right.
I would like to see him get some votes there. Westbrook, definitely his game is worthy of MVP caliber. No one can debate that. However, I would find it difficult to award a player on a team that's in the eighth seed and quite honestly, by the end of the season, could fall out of the eighth spot. I mean, there are only three games separating them and New Orleans. You know, and it's, you know, they're hot right now. Obviously, the hottest team in the league, 9-1 over the last 10. But what happens if they go into a long road trip and they falter two or three games? They may not even be in the playoffs. So I'd have a difficult time choosing Westbrook. The name that neither of us mentioned that a lot are talking about, Mr. Triple Double himself, James Harden, scored a triple double last night. And a lot of people are talking about his game being worthy of MVP status. Kind of like as with Westbrook, because Dwight Howard's been gone all year, he's pretty much carrying that team, and he's got them, quite honestly, one of the best years that Houston's had. They're number three in the West, you know, averaging about 103 points a game or so. Just seven games out of first. Is that in reach? You know, neither here nor there. So James Harden probably gets some looks, and I'd probably say it comes down to Harden and Steph Curry. And they probably will. I would probably lean to James Harden, quite honestly. Even though, like I said, even though I like Steph's game, I don't know if he's really crossed over yet quite to super, superstar. Don't get me wrong, this year has helped. His performance at the All-Star Weekend helped. But I still think James Harden probably has a slight edge over him there. Now, if I go out west field and take a look at some of these teams, I'm sorry, out east, I apologize, and take a look at some of these teams, and we know that the balance of power has always been west over the east. But the east is really trying to do some things, especially with I don't think we can say enough about the pickup that the Miami Heat made by getting Dragic from the Phoenix Suns to come and anchor down their offense at the point guard position. Now, of course, news broke this week that Chris Bosh would miss the rest of the season. That obviously is a blow to him. But, you know, Miami can make some noise here going down the stretch. Cleveland's playing as good a ball as anybody. You know, they're 8-2 out of their last 10, which is the best in the Eastern Conference. And also, as just before the show started, we find out that they've signed Kendrick Perkins to help solidify the middle. And that's been, ever since Varejao went down early in the season, that's been a place where they've been somewhat questionable. But now you bring in another championship pedigree center to help anchor that part. So Cleveland obviously poised to make a run. Atlanta's faltered a little bit. They're not as red hot as they were, but you know what? They were so far ahead. They're still doing fine. And then, you know, we talk about defensive winning. It's the defensive-minded Chicago Bulls. Derrick Rose somehow has managed to stay healthy. Don't know how he's done it, but he's managed to stay healthy for the most part going down the stretch. So you got a lot of options out east as well. Who do you see in the Eastern Conference representing the East in the playoffs?
Well, my answer for this one is going to be pretty much the same as it was for the West. I mean, it's going to be the team that has had a little bit of success, that's kind of trying to turn the corner, but they play team basketball. You know, there's not, you know, really a huge superstar. It's just a group of individuals that play well with each other. And so I'm going with Atlanta. You know, I just feel like Atlanta, with the way that they can play defense, they're in number one right now. I mean, I know Memphis was number two, but they're right there at the top of the pack. I don't think you're going to see, and you could, but I just don't think this year you're going to see a number five or a number four seed winning the conference finals and going on to the NBA finals. I think it's going to be a team that's number one or number two that's going to get it done. So I'm going with Atlanta, even though you don't know who their starting five is. I don't know who their starting five is. No one in Atlanta knows those guys, even though it was like four out of five were all-stars. But they're low-key guys, and I think that plays well into today's game. Just like your topic last week, you know, about not having any big-time like superstars in the league. Or, I mean, they're there, but it's just not as prominent as it was 10 years ago, where it seemed like every team had a go-to player. The game is changing a little bit, you know, and you pointed that out. So I think that's going to be in their favor that, I don't know, that you can't just focus on one guy, you know, shut this guy down and they could struggle. I just think they play team basketball and they're going to be tough to beat when it gets down and deep into the playoffs. Like you said, when teams slow it down, they're focusing on defense and all these things. I think it's harder to prepare for a team like Atlanta than it would be to prepare for a team like Cleveland or Washington, you know, or somebody like that. So, hey, and, you know, I meant to look it up. You mentioned Bosch. I meant to look that up because he had the blood clots in his lungs. And who was it, Jerome Kersey? Is that the guy's name that passed away from that just, you know, days before Bosch was announced? I mean, so is Bosch going to play basketball again? I mean, I never did, you know, I wasn't able to kind of read up on that and see what maybe the prognosis was.
Well, they're definitely trying to play that part of it down, that he'll be fine, no worries, just as a precautionary measure. He's not going to play the rest of the year. But yeah, you know, that could be part of it. So I don't know if we know enough right now to make a determination on what the rest of his career is going to be like. And, you know, if you're a Miami Heat fan, you know, that had to have been a troublesome day. Because at the beginning of the day, you find out you get the steal at the trade deadline, the prize that everybody wanted. You know, L.A. was in on it. Dallas thought they might go in on it. One of the teams in New York, I can't remember if it was the Nets or the Knicks, but one of those teams thought they could get in on the deal. But your team lands at Miami. You land Dragic. You finally have your point guard.
Yeah.
And you think, wow, we could make a run. But then later on that day, you find out the news about Chris Bosh. So, you know, bittersweet day for Miami fan. And, you know, they could have been a team that could have made a run and made a little noise late. But with that, there's no way I see them doing anything in the playoffs. And you're right about Atlanta with their defense. We talked about it with Memphis. You know, they may be the Memphis of the Eastern Conference because they definitely have that lunch pail mentality that they're just going to go to work. But, still, I can't go against Cleveland. I can't go against King James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love for the simple fact that one thing that I've noticed in the NBA Finals, and we were just talking about it, you know, when the games slow down, not only is it going to take good, strong defense to win, and that's what we liked about Memphis, but also, Phil, there's those games where you just need that one player to take over the game for the last 2 minutes. And Atlanta doesn't have – I don't think Atlanta has the guy that can take over a game, but we know Cleveland does. Now, the thing about it is you don't know who it's going to be. You might go into those last 2 minutes thinking it's going to be LeBron James, but it could be Kyrie Irving. And you know, whether we like it or not, it could also be Kevin Love. So it's so what I like about Cleveland and the reason that I picked them to make it to the finals, I just feel like for that one reason alone, they've got guys on that team that can take over a game when you need it done. They've got guys on that team now with bringing in Kendrick Perkins that knows exactly the level of intensity it takes to win a championship. And if you think back a few months back, Phil, we still don't know yet, haven't heard anything. But if you remember a couple of weeks back, we were talking, and it had been said that Ray Allen might decide to suit up and join a team here heading down the stretch. And Cleveland was one of the teams that he thought about playing for. So if, in fact, they can, if that's his choice, if Ray Allen decides to suit up just one more time, let the fans get another look at Jesus Shuttlesworth, I think Cleveland could definitely be the odds-on favorite to not only make a deep run into these playoffs, but to really challenge whatever the West brought forth and actually make a good run for a championship.
Well, I really don't think that.
Phil, I hate to do this, man. Man, you want to talk about the kiss of death. I have just jinxed everybody. Chicago fans, I apologize. Breaking news just in. The Chicago Bulls announced that three-time All-Star Derrick Rose will undergo surgery for a torn meniscus in his right knee. I did it. I can't believe I just jinxed Chicago just like that. Man alive.
I mean, when was this injury? Tonight?
I don't know. I thought the kid was playing. That just came across the wire that he's having surgery for a torn meniscus. I think we have to call it a career. I think we got to call it a career on this kid. It's. I mean, how many comebacks can you have?
I mean, I'm reading it right now. Rose reported early in the day with right knee pain. An exam and subsequent MRI confirmed the tear. But see, the thing is, like a torn meniscus, I mean, that's not, you know, they're saying just a tear. So, I mean, some guys that, you know, so again, I think it goes back to just his toughness and anything that he has, you know, just like Durant and, quote, discomfort in his toe, you know, a lot of guys are going to play through that. So now I'm just kind of curious to see, you know, what's going on with, you know, as far as the timetable. He does say a timetable for Rose's return will be determined once he has surgery, you know, so I don't know. I mean, he may be back during the playoffs because they're saying it's just a tear. I don't think it's – I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess a tear.
Look who we talked about, though. We talked about Derrick Rose.
But that's what
this
I'm saying.
You know, this is the same guy whose team was deep in the playoffs, winning games barely on defense. He's suiting up in practice every day, shooting the ball, running up and down the court, but wouldn't lace him up for a game. So I don't think you can count on this guy coming back this season.
I don't either.
You know, and if he doesn't, I don't think you can count on him, period. I mean, enough is enough, you know.
Hey, man, who's your source over there in Chicago, man? I mean, because you called it. I mean, earlier, you went Babe Ruth on us and you called your shot.
I mean, dang, Chicago fans, well, we'll be getting hate mail from Chicago for months to come on this one, dude. I sure hate that we definitely kissed the death on that one. But yeah, that's unfortunate. It's tough to hear. It definitely clears up a lot out east, though. because Chicago, I felt like, was a team, because they were so defensive-minded, I felt like Chicago was a team. I felt like the coaching staff, you know, was such that they were battle-tested in these playoffs that they could have really made some trouble for some of those other teams. But with Chicago out, I mean, Cleveland really got a clear path. I mean, because if I was looking at teams to match up and from a defensive perspective, I would have said that Chicago would have gave teams fits. But you know what? You don't even have to worry about it. You don't even have to worry about it.
Can we confirm that Derrick Rose listens to our show? Because it's like right when we got into it saying, hey, you could have Derrick Rose going up against Harvey Dent and gang, and Harvey Dent is LeBron James for those who don't listen to the show, but two-phase Harvey Dent. But it's like as soon as they found out, oh, man, yeah, I forgot about that, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, I got this torn meniscus in my knee. Man, that's just crazy.
It's crazy. Now, listen, I saved this just for you because I know how you feel about LeBron, and you call him two-phase Harvey Dent. I knew you would like this. Look, LeBron in an interview, this happened to him earlier today. Now, you know that LeBron's face is plastered all over the TV and magazines. This big, huge spokesperson for McDonald's, right? So in an interview, somebody asked him about when did he decide to start weightlifting and, you know, taking better care of his body. And he said, oh, he said, you know, 24. So when I first came in the league, I didn't care about nothing, man. I ate McDonald's every day, and I didn't work out, blah, 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 blah. Well, then he caught himself and realized, he's like, oh, snap, I just trashed one of my major sponsors. So another reporter said, well, when was the last time you had McDonald's? And he was like, oh, every day. Oh, I eat it every day. I eat McDonald's every day. So true to your word, Two-Face showed himself in an interview with reporters, slammed McDonald's one minute, said, oh, I didn't care nothing about my body. I ate McDonald's every day. And then had to backtrack on it and be like, oh yeah, I had an egg McMuffin this morning. I eat it every day. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I knew you would enjoy that. I knew. I said, oh, I remind myself to tell my man Phil about that. Well, so yeah, so this basketball thing, like I say, is getting exciting. Let's hit on football really quick, Phil, as we start to wind the show down a little bit here. Got about a little less than 10 minutes left to go. Combine's going on this week, and, of course, this past weekend, the quarterbacks were up and throwing. After the combine, and I don't know if you watched any of it personally, Phil, or if you just read the recaps from the various reporters, but after the combine, it appears that there is a consensus that not only will Jameis Winston be the first quarterback picked, he'll be picked in favor of Marcus Mariota, but most people are saying that he will be the unanimous number one overall pick. Are you in agreement with that?
And they're saying Mariota will?
No. Winston, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. You know, I mean, that's a tough choice. Now, if you're asking me, if I was the GM, would I draft him? I mean, my answer would be no, just because I feel like there's just too many red flags out there, and you have to look at recent history and not really go with the quote sexy pick. You know, that Manziel was a sexy pick, and I think a lot of times they get wrapped up in that hype. Now, to me, it depends on if you're looking at it from two different angles. Are you looking at it to win games, or are you looking at it to make money? And if you want to make money, and you know, maybe the Winston pick could do that, just like Manziel with the Browns. I'm sure the Browns sold more season tickets by drafting Manziel than they would have with any other pick that they could have made. So even though he has been an utter disappointment and has not fulfilled his end of the bargain, they still made money, and it is a business.
Right.
So when you look at it from that angle, then, hey, it can make sense. But I just don't think that Winston is going to be the player that, if he is drafted number one, that they would expect him to be. I don't think he's going to be a Manziel. I mean, again, like I've always said, Manziel has no redeeming qualities. You know, he doesn't have a strong arm. He's not too terribly fast. I mean, I think what was his, you know, 40-yard, you know, 4.5, you know, so, I mean, he's not – he doesn't have blazing speed, but Winston does have some redeeming qualities. He can make a lot of the throws that a pocket passer is tasked to make in the NFL. So he can play the game. I just don't know if he's going to be able to keep himself out of trouble. But, you know, there's no way I would draft Mariota number one either. I'm not saying that. I just don't think this year there's a quarterback, if I was a GM, that would go number one if I had the number one pick.
Yeah. And let me be clear. Let me say this at the top. Yeah, I would clearly take Winston number one. And this might be more of circumstance than anything else. You know, the number one pick's going to Tampa, who desperately needs a quarterback. Oh, and he just happens to be from Florida. I mean, it's a perfect storm type thing that makes it a no-brainer pick. And I, where I disagree with you, I don't think the comparisons to Manziel is fair if I'm Jameis Winston. I mean, yeah, great. They were both Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks coming out of college. But that's, to me, where the comparisons and similarities stop. And you kind of said it yourself, because Winston has some gifts that will play well at the NFL level. His size, for example, starters. The fact that he played in a pro-style offense and not a spread offense. The fact that he stands in the pocket and delivers. But the biggest thing that I like about Winston is he's shown that he can overcome adversity. And I don't care if that's adversity off the field or adversity on the field in the game. He's shown time and time again that he can overcome adversity. And we talked about that with Manziel. We wanted to see what happened when he got hit with adversity. And, well, now we know. You hit him with adversity, he goes to rehab. So I don't think the comparison is fair to say that Winston is likened to a Johnny Manziel, because I feel like they're really different animals. Grant, go ahead.
Well, I mean, my comparisons that I'm making are off the field. I mean, there's just a lot of smoke around these individuals, and that's what I try to tell people. You know, they try to say, oh, the partying – with Manziel, it doesn't matter, man. He's in college. It doesn't matter. You know, well, you know, he's in Las Vegas after he gets drafted. Look, the season hasn't started. You know, it doesn't matter. But all these things that happen, they try to tell me that it didn't matter. And whenever that's your personality and then you go and get money and you don't have the work ethic or the maturity to handle yourself, that's when it, to me, it does matter. And that's when it comes into you know, when it comes to play in. So that's what I'm saying about Winston. You know, whenever he gets in trouble, the things that he says is not like, hey, I was wrong. You know, he told me, look, guys, I'm only 20 years old. You know, I'm like, well, if you're 20, you're a grown man. You should understand. You know, y'all got to cut me some slack. I'm only 20. So that kind of lets me into his head and how he thinks. And he likes people to make excuses for him. So I don't know, but, you know, rape charges, stealing things. I mean, just there's all these different aspects of it. And so I feel like he's not going to be able to just turn that off.
Mm-hmm.
17, you know, but okay, he's 17. This guy is probably 21 years old now. I just don't think he's just going to be able to say, okay, I'm in the NBA. I mean, I'm in the NFL, making millions. I'm going to take this serious. I mean, and so that's what I'm saying. It's off the field stuff. Just like Manziel in the locker room and that, you know, okay, I need to start taking this thing more serious. I mean, that's not the time when you're doing an interview to realize you need to take it serious. That was back before you got drafted that you knew you needed to take it serious. So that's what I feel like. You know, Winston is cut from that same cloth, and I think he's going to struggle a little bit. But again, not as much on the field because he's a better quarterback. You know, what he brings to the table translates so much better to the NFL than what Manziel.
And that part of it is right, but I still, but even on the off the field stuff, you know, A couple of things on the off the field stuff. You know, Winston has that natural leadership quality when guys gravitate towards him. Even though he's got all this off the field stuff, this guy as a freshman is addressing his team in the key moments of the season, the key moments of a championship game, telling them what we need to do. Let's go out there and get it done. And not everybody has that. Manziel obviously doesn't have that. You've never heard a teammate of Jameis Winston say anything bad about Jameis, but you have clearly heard Johnny Manziel teammates say all kind of things about it. But here's the biggest thing. I want you to just take a look back and think about this when we talk about these two guys, especially with their off-the-field problems. I don't worry so much about Winston's off-the-field issues because he seems to be more grounded because you have heard from and seen his parents involved with him at some point. You don't even know what Johnny Manziel's folks look like. I mean, the reason this kid is out jet-setting and spending money and going to Vegas, because that's what his folks do. His people aren't any more grounded than he is, and I think that's what the problem is. There's nobody holding Johnny Manziel accountable all through college, and nobody's doing it now. But Winston comes from a very close-knit, tight family, and you can still see mom and dad's hands on the reins, so to speak, in helping him out. So I don't worry about him so much in that regard. But, hey, time will tell. And that's another plus, too, about being drafted close to home. You know, if he gets drafted by Tampa close to home, that influence of family is right there, and it goes a long, long way, as opposed to being a boy from Texas playing in the Midwest in Cleveland, where you feel like there's no eyes on you quite as much. But, hey, that's going to do it for tonight's show, folks. We've definitely enjoyed bringing it to you. We hope you've enjoyed listening to it. And if so, hey, by all means, check us out on iTunes, or you can listen to this show and all other shows. You've been listening to the P.O. Show. That's Polar Opposites with Big T and Cool Hand Phil. We'll bring it back to you next week at this exact same time. Good night.